Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Mem Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins two lines from the top of Daf Mem Vov. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, let's glance at the side where we have the nosei, the topic heading, and we read Bevikuach Bein Sochir Ubalabayas. We will deal with a controversy between a worker, a hired hand, and the householder, im shilem, whether or not he was paid at all, and number two, bekama kotzatz, what was the agreed wage? Mi sover umotai, who holds and when the socher nishba v'notel, the hired hand can swear and collect. The balabayas nishba v'yafsid socher, or the householder swears, and through that the worker loses. Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya, when you have someone who is trying to extract payment, so it is upon him to bring proof. V'imlo mevi raya balabayas yinatzeach b'li shvua. The householder, in the absence of the worker bringing proof, as would be in the case of bringing forth witnesses, the householder will win out even without taking an oath. So these are points, these are ideas that will come up in this Gemara. And now the Gemara, second line from the top, Omer Abirmiya Ba'aba, Shochulei mi Beirav l'Shmuel. It was sent from the yeshiva of Rav to Shmuel. Yilamdenu Rabbeinu, would you teach us? Umano imer shtayim kotzatzali. The worker claims that he was promised a wage of two. The halo omer, and the householder says, lo kotzatziloch elo achas. I set for you a wage of only one. Mi nishba, who is to swear? Omar Lahen Shmuel responds, Bezu, in a controversy like this, Yishova Balabayas V'yavsid Uman. The householder has the right to swear, to verify, to substantiate his position, and through that, the worker will lose out. Ktsitsa Badai Midkar Dekiri Inchi. The amount set as the wage, that is something that people householders, people that employers definitely remember, even though there might be a period of time during the day when they're not sure whether or not someone was paid, but as far as the amount agreed upon, that the householder definitely knows. He has clarity on that, and therefore the right to swear and thereby substantiate your position is given to the employer. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice a vigorous discussion ensues simply by noticing the triangle that appears in alternating directions. And this takes us down to the lower part of this page of Gemara. On the side, you can see we have a mivne, a structural note. Triangles appear with the point facing up and facing down. This is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take structure. With the point facing up in this instance, those triangles represent kushios. The inverted triangle represents tshuvos, responses. So now the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so that the balabayas, that the employer, has to swear? V'otoni Rabo Bar Shmuel. Rabo Bar Shmuel has the following Tanaic source, and we've actually seen this in the past. Kotzatz Ha'amotzi mechavero olavaraya. When it comes to the amount established as the wage, so the one who wants to extract, namely the employee, the worker, it's upon him to bring proof. Now this then suggests, let's continue reading, ve'ilo maisi raya poka. And if the employer cannot bring proof, as would be the case in the form of witnesses, then he loses just like that without any further oaths. Amai, why should that be? If Shmuel is correct, Yishova balabayis viavsiduman, the employer should have to swear, and only then would the worker or employee lose out. Well, we don't say that. It says that the worker is going to lose out if he merely does not bring proof. That is a kasha on Shmuel. Shmuel said that in order for the worker to lose out, the employer would have to take an oath to verify his position. The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Nachman, litzdodin kotoni. The reading of the source quoted by Rabba Bar Shmuel is to be done thusly. O mevi raya vitol, the sochir either brings proof, and through the proof that he brings, he can benefit. O yishova balabayis viyafsid umar. The alternative would be, if the sochir doesn't bring proof, it doesn't mean he automatically loses. The employer would have to swear, and then the Uman would lose out. That is in accordance with Shmuel. Mesve, Hanoisein Taliso Luman. Here we raise a question. An owner of an article of clothing gives it to a worker. Uman Omer Kotzatz Toli Shtayim. Worker says, you agree to pay me two. The Halo Omer, and the owner says, Lo Kotzatz Lo Chelo Achas. I agreed only to pay you one. All the while that the article of clothing is in the hands of the craftsman, the artisan, in this case probably a tailor, it's upon the owner to bring proof to substantiate his position. At this point, he is the motzi mechaver. He is the one who is trying to get his article of clothing back. He's trying to extract the element. Nosno lo, then, when the article is given to the owner, bizmanoi nishba venotel, within the expected time frame to be paid. We've discussed this in the past. Let's just talk in terms of, we'll say, round numbers. During the zmano is the 12-hour time period following the return of the article. So if the article was returned during the daytime, till next morning, that would be called bizman. If it was returned during the nighttime, so then till evening of the next day, that would be called bizmano. So within that time frame, nishba vinotel, the uman, the tailor, swears to how much is to be given to him, and that's what he'll get. Ovar zmano, hamotzi mechaver levoraya. When that amount of time passes, then the worker would have to, then hamotzi mechaver levoraya, the one who was trying to extract the money, would have to bring proof. In other words, the in the event that the tailor didn't get paid and that much time went by, an oath wouldn't be enough. He would have to bring witnesses to establish how much he was to be paid. Bizmano miha nishba benota. What do we see in this source? We see that within the immediate time frame following the return of the article, the uman, the tailor, the worker, can swear and collect. Amai. Why is that the case? If Shmuel is correct, that when it comes to amount established for wages, this is something the owner definitely remembers, Yishova bal habayis v'yafsid uman. The owner should be the one swearing and thereby cause loss to the uman. So, and yet the source doesn't say that. The source says that within the time frame that one is expected to be paid, the tailor, the worker, has the, we'll say, upper hand, the right to swear and collect, even though we're dealing with knowledge of wages. Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Ha money. Rav Nachman Yitzchak comes to the defense of Shmuel and says that this source, Rabbi Yehuda, he. This is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda, a specific Tanaic opinion, and Shmuel holds like the Rabbonon, like those that disagree with Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore Shmuel is on firm ground. What is Rabbi Yehuda? The Omar calls man sheshvua noite etzel balabayas. Whenever you have a situation that it would appear that the shvua is to be taken by the balabayas, in a case like this, that term indicates modeh b'mikzas, partial admission. And you have here a case of partial admission where the Baal HaBayis agreed that he is to pay one, but not the full two. So the rule is, sochir nishba v'notel. This is Rebbe Huda's approach, that the oath is transferred from the worker, from the owner, that is, and placed on the worker. He, the worker, the uman, the sochir, swears and collects. So that's a kula, a leniency for the benefit of the worker, but this is all a concept or an approach taken by the Tana Rebbe Yehuda. You notice we have a long bracketed section. If you skip the brackets, use your bracket length indicator, you see, we're going to raise a question on Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok's response. And that will follow Maskiflo. You see, after the brackets, Maskiflo, Rav Shisha, Breid Ravidi, the gist of the question is going to be, how can you say that that's only Rabbi Yehuda's approach? It would appear to be even the Rabbonin's approach, or certainly the Rabbonin's approach. And if you were to end with that, you'll then have a problem for Shmuel. But in the meantime, we have a bracketed section. You notice we have on the side of the Gemara a Mivne note where the crown shape appears. This is a chipus, a search. Achar Hecha Omar Rav Yehuda. Where did Rav Yehuda in fact say what Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok claimed? Calls man sheshvua noitel, it's a balabaya socher nishba v'notel. That when you have what appears to be a shvua in the direction of the balabayas, of the owner, the shvua is transferred to the benefit of the employee, the worker. The Gemara. Hey, Rabbi Yehuda, which source with Rabbi Yehuda would indicate the rule that we just heard by Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok? If you're to think it's Rabbi Yehuda of the Mishnah, that's not likely. Achmuri kol machmir. If anything, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah represents a stringency toward workers. He does not allow workers to swear unless there is a hoidah b'miktas, a partial admission. Disnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad shetei shom miktas hoidah. And if there's no miktas hoidah, if there's no partial admission, then the owner will win out. That opinion is a strictness, an opinion of limitation of power given to the worker. So, as far as Rabbi Yehuda the Mishnah, that does not appear to be a representation of Rabbi Yehuda giving worker the upper hand, the right to swear, and thereby win. Elo Rabbi Yehuda de Braisa, de Sanya. We'll see now a Tanaic source with Rabbi Yehuda that would reflect the idea mentioned by Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok just before. De Sanya, Sochir Kozman Shel Ovar Olav Zmano, Hareze Nishba V'Notel, the employee, as long as it's within the aforementioned time frame for receiving payment, then if he has any claims that he didn't receive payment, then he can swear and collect. Vim lav, if it's not within that time frame, it's ovar zmano, eno nishba v'notel. Then he doesn't have the right to swear and collect. We assume that if so much time went by, in other words, the time period, the daytime or nighttime period following the completion of his work has lapsed, the owner has certainly paid him. V'omar of Yudah Amosai, Bizman Sh'omar Lo, when is this the case? That's when the worker says, Tain li schori chamishim dinu sheyesh li biyodcha, give me the 50 dinar, like $50 that you owe me. V'omer, and the owner says, His kabalto mehem dinar zahav. You already received 25. Dinar zahav is a gold dinar, which is the equivalent of 25 dinar kesef. O sha'omar lo shtayim kotzatzta. Or the worker says, you established the wage of two. V'halo omer, and the employer says, lo kotzatzi loch elo achas. I agreed to pay you only one. These are examples of what we call mode b'miksas, where there's partial admission. Avol, omar lo, if the owner, the employer said, lo sochartich me'olam, I never hired you. Oh, sh'omar lo sochartich v'nosati loch schorcha, I hired you and I paid you in full. Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. Then the employee, the sochir, would have to bring proof to his position, of to his claim, and only then would be able to get what he wants. Well, what do we see in this source? We see that Rabbi Yehuda describes the sochir nishba v'notel in a case where there's a disagreement about regarding the amount that was established. So, and that's exactly what Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchok said, that when you see a disagreement with regard to amount established for wages, and Rebbe Yehuda entitling the employee to swear and collect, so that is the basis, that's the authorship of the source that we saw above. The source beginning with the words Hanosein Talis Salumon, which was raised as a question on Shmuel. So we see that that's not a question on Shmuel. What was represented in that source where we saw Hanosein Talis Salumon with the employee swearing and collecting in a wage amount controversy, that's Shitas Rebbe Yehuda. The Rabbanon would not agree with that. The Rabbanan would say, like Shmuel, that the employer, the Balabayas, has a right to, he has the right to swear regarding amount established as wages. Well, we have a question. Maskif lo Rav Shisho Breid Ravidi. Elo Kotsats. Are you then suggesting that the source that spoke about the amount, the controversy about how much was established as wages, and the right of the worker to swear and collect, are you telling me Reb Yehuda hi v'lo Rabbanan, that it's only the opinion of Reb Yehuda and not the Rabbanan? Hashtohe chidemachmi Reb Yehuda mekili Rabbanan. Mind you, like we saw in the Mishnah, the chance of the worker swearing and collecting was more limited in Reb Yehuda's eyes. Reb Yehuda was machmir on the worker, and the Rabbanan were mekil. They gave the worker the upper hand, even when you have a kofar hakol situation. Hecha de mekil Reb Yehuda. If you see a source in which Reb Yehuda is mekil toward the worker, machmiri Rabbanan, the Rabbanan would all of a sudden be more restricted. That's very unlikely. V'elamai Rabbanan. So then, what do you want to say? You want to say that that would be in accordance with the Rabbanan, namely that the Kotsats the issue, the source involving Kotsats and the worker being Nishba V'notel is something that the Rabbanan would subscribe to. Well, that's not so smooth. V'elohad de Tani Rabba Bar Shmuel. The source we saw above in the name of Rabba Bar Shmuel that was brought by Rabba Bar Shmuel, and it taught in that source, Kotsats Hamotzi Mechaver Varaya. When you have a fixed amount that falls into controversy, how much was established for wages, the worker, in order to get his claim, has to bring proof. He has to bring witnesses. Okay, so that's a Tanaic source, which says, worker, in order to substantiate his claim, has to bring witnesses. Well, money, who would the author of that be? Lo Reb Yehuda, the Lo Rabbonon. It's not going to be according to either of those Tanoim, because according to what we've just established, then that not only Reb Yehuda allows the Socher to be Nishba V'Notel, the Rabbonon would also be like that. Well, we can't leave a source taught by Rabba Bar Shmuel unauthored. Ela Omar Rava. Here is a very big turnaround. Basically, it's like this. The source above with Kotzatz, that source is only according to Reb Yehuda. At the source, namely, where there's a controversy over wages and you see the worker swearing, collecting his claim, that is only according to the Tana Reb Yehuda. Shmuel does not hold like that. Shmuel holds like the Rabbonon. And as far as the machlokes between Reb Yehuda and the Chachomim in the Mishnah, that's a different story. And we continue. Beha komifligi. The Rabbeinu Chananel explains that at this point we're coming to explain the Machlokas, Reb Yehuda, and the Rabbonin in the Mishnah. But as far as the issue concerning a wage amount controversy and how you solve that, well, that's a Machlokas, Reb Yehuda, and the Rabbonin. And in that case, Reb Yehuda gives the worker the upper hand, and the Rabbonon would give the employer the upper hand to swear and thereby get his way. And that's what Shmuel said above. Now, let's go on in the Gemara, but realizing that we're not talking about the issue of amount established as wage, but rather the Machlokas in the Mishnah is going to be explained. Do we give the worker a chance when there is a controversy as to whether or not he got paid? Do we give him the upper hand to swear and collect or not? And under what circumstances do you have that machlokas? So this is what Reb Yehuda and the Rabbonon argue about. Just to remind you, the case in the Mishnah was where a worker says, you know, give me my wages that you owe me, and the owner says, I gave you your wages. And the worker says, what do you mean you gave me my wages? I didn't get anything. So the Tanakama says, well, the worker can swear and collect. And Reb Yehuda says, the worker is not going to swear and collect until you have an element of partial admission. The issue in the Mishnah has nothing to do with amount established as the wage. The issue in the Mishnah concerns a claim as to whether I got paid, whether the worker got paid or not. So regarding that, we see the following. Reb Yehuda Sovar, Bidoraisa Ovdu Le Takanta Lesochir, Ubidrabonon. Bidoraisa means when you have a mode b'mikta situation where the worker would claim, you know, you still owe me 50, you owe me $50, and the owner, the employer says, I paid you already 25 of those 50, I owe you only 25 more. In Torah terms, that's called mode b'miktas, and they made a provision, an innovation to benefit the worker. Because you have a solid basis for a shvua, you have a Torah basis for a shvua, all the Rabbonin had to do is, we'll call it one-step innovation, transferring the shvua from the employer and placing it on the, giving the worker the right to swear. That's a special takona for the benefit of workers, which we've discussed in the past. However, if you have a situation which is strictly rabbinic, example would be, worker says, I didn't get paid yet. Owner says, I paid you in full. Kofar akol, complete denial. That's a controversy representing a situation where there is no basis for a shvua. To take that situation and say, well, we're going to impose a shvua anyway, and then the shvua that ordinarily is taken by the one to exempt himself from paying, which would be the employer, is then transferred onto the worker to collect payment. That's going too far as Rebbe is concerned, and that's what is meant by the Gemara when it says, by the Bidurabonan, when you have a kofar akol situation, that itself is a takanta. That's a takana. To swear at all is a takana. And then to take the shvua and transfer it from the balabayas to the worker, that's a takanta litakanta. Lo avdino. That we don't. That's a double stage rabbinic intervention. One, to create a shvua in a kofar akol situation, and then to take the shvua, which is generally an oath of exemption, and place it upon the one who wants to collect. That's a second stage of rabbinic intervention, and that we do not do. V'rabbonon savri, b'derabbonon nami avdinon takanta l'sofir. When it comes to the opinion of the Rabbonon, even in a purely rabbinic situation, where you don't have hoidor b'miktsas, where you have a kofar b'kol, they nevertheless transfer the shvua from the balabayas to the sochir, to swear and collect. However, when it comes to uktsinsa, how much was established as the wage? Midkar dochir. Then, according to the Rabbonon, the balabayas is believed, and like Shmuel, all he has to do is he swears how much he set the wages at and collects. That's the opinion of the Rabbonon. Rav Yehuda would disagree, as we said above, but Shmuel is based on the Rabbonon. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah. Nigzal Ketzat Hoyu Mi'idim Oisoi Shenichnas Lebeisoi Lemashkino. A second example from the Mishnah standpoint of a Nishba Litol, where rabbinically speaking, the right to swear and collect was granted to an individual. In this case, the party that was stolen from. What's the case? So the Mishnah says, witnesses testify that someone went empty-handed into someone's house and exited with things. Now the language of the Mishnah is Me'inim Oso Shenichnas Leveso Limashkino. Someone went into the house to take something by force, to take Limashkino is to take something, claiming that he's taking collateral. Not by agreement, not by court order, but that's his claim. The Dilma Lo Mishkino. In the Mishnah you saw the word Limashkino. He went in with that intent. Maybe he never took anything. Mi lo oma Rav Nachman. Is it not so that Rav Nachman teaches Haiman de nokit nargo biyodei? A person is holding an axe, the omar, and the axe holder says, Ezel ve'aktele ledikla deplanya. I'm gonna go and chop down so and so's palm tree. Vishtakach de kotil vishodi. And lo and behold, You go a little later and you see that palm tree cut and cast on the ground. Lo amrinon, we do not say to hu katle, that the one who threatened to cut it actually chopped it down. Almo, we see from Rav Nachman, Ovid inish degozim v'lo ovid. People exaggerate. They threaten. They bark, but they don't bite. They gozim as they exaggerate velovid, but don't actually do anything. Hacharami, so too, in our case, someone claimed he was going to go and take something as a mashkon. The gozim velovid, he claimed he was going to go take something, but never did anything. So why in the Mishnah do we say that someone who claimed he was going to go in to take a mashkon, that we give the owner the right to swear and collect from him? Maybe the guy never did anything. So the Gemara says, Eimo u'mishkano. We saw someone go empty-handed into someone's house and took something from the house. The Gemara asks, well, let's see my mishkano. Let's just see, what did he take? Why are we giving a right to the owner to swear and collect? Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Betoano Kalim Hanitlim Tachas Knofov. The case involves the owner claiming that vessels, we'll say small sized vessels, vessels that someone would hide under their cloak, shove into their pockets, that's what was taken. So we can't just go see what he took and insist that be returned, because we don't know what he took. And all you have is the owner claiming that small vessels were taken, and in that context, the Mishnah says the owner swears as to what was taken and collects those. Omar Rav Yehuda, Ra'uhu Shehitmin Kalim Tachas Knofa V'yotza. A case where we see someone that put some vessels under his cloak and went out and exited someone's house. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis. The Omar and the taker says, Lekuchenhein biyadi. Oh, sure, I bought them. And the Balabayas in the meantime is saying, what do you mean you bought them? I loaned them to you. Eino Neemon. The fellow, the taker, is not believed when he says, I bought them, even with an oath. And as we go on in the Gemara, you're going to see this halacha qualified several times. And on the side, you can see under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the double underline is here to indicate a series of Mosai Amrinon Di Eino Neeman Hach Odom Shinir Yotzmi Habayas Im Kalim Tmunim Tachas Bigdo. Under what circumstances do we in fact say that the taker is not believed? This guy who took things after shoving the items in his pocket, we say he's not believed. Under what circumstances? So let's see the Gemara. The Lo Amoron Elo Balabayas Sheinu Osi Limkor Kalov. This is all true, that the taker is not believed when you're dealing with a homeowner that doesn't sell things. Aval Balabayas Osi Limkor as Kalov, a person who has a little store in his house, or he's known to sell his vessels. Neemon, the taker is believed when he says, oh, well, that which I put in my pockets, that's just the merchandise that I bought. V'she'ein osui limkor es kelov nami lo amoron. And even in a case where the owner doesn't sell things, that which we said that the taker is not believed, elo dvorim she'ein darkon lahatmin. It's only when you're dealing with items that you ordinarily would not put in your pocket, and he put them in his pocket. Avol dvorim shedarkon lahatmin neemon. Things that a person does ordinarily put in his pocket, then he would be believed when he says, I bought them. Now, Rashi adds, even though we're dealing with someone that ordinarily doesn't sell things, people sometimes are hard-pressed for ready cash, and they will sell items. V'she'ein darkon lahat minami. Those kind of vessels that a person ordinarily doesn't hide under his garment. Nami lo amoron. Even then, that which we said we won't believe the taker, elo inish delot sania. This is true with regard to a person that ordinarily is not a very tzania is a word indicating someone who is modest and private, person who does things in the open. So you have a person that ordinarily does things, carries things in the open, we won't believe him when you're dealing with items that you ordinarily wouldn't hide, and he hides them. Avalinish ditzania, a person who is in general in his own behavior, he is a modest, quiet individual. Hainu Urche, this is his way. Even things that you ordinarily would carry in an exposed fashion, he will put them under his garment. He will cover them. And therefore, a person like that, an Inish Tzania, would be believed when he says, L'kuchen hein biyodi. V'lo amoron elo. And this point that we don't believe the taker when he says they're bought, elo zelmer shulin v'zelmer l'kuchen, where the balabayas is claiming that I loaned it to you, and the taker is saying, I bought it. Avol beginuvim, if the balabayas, instead of saying, I loaned it to you, he's saying, you're a thief, you stole it. Lav kol kamine, it's not in his power, lavzuki inish beganvi lo machzikinon, to establish people as thieves when they were not previously known as such, that we don't do. Velo amoron, that which we said up till now, that the taker is not going to be believed with his claim that they are purchased, with of course all the previous qualifications in mind, this is also qualified. El bidvorim wasuyim lahash lahaskir. When you're dealing with those kind of items that people ordinarily loan out. People ordinarily loan out, and the balabais is saying, I loaned it to you, he will be believed over the taker. Avol dvorim shein asuyim lahashu lahaskir. If you're dealing with items that aren't ordinarily loaned out, ne'emon, the taker will be believed to swear, claiming that he bought them. And the Gemara illustrates that now. The Sholach Rav Huna Bar Ovin. Dvorim wasuim lahashu lahaskir, viomar lekuchen hein viodi, eino ne'emon. Items that are usually loaned from one to another, or loaned or rented for that matter, and the taker says, I bought them, so he is not believed. So this idea of not being believed is limited to those kind of items that are ordinarily loaned out, and of course the owner is claiming, I loaned it to you. Ki ha derava, and an illustration of that in practical terms, involving rava, apik zuga de sarbula, the safra dagadita miyasmi. He legally extracted from orphans a scissors. Zuga de sarbala is a scissors that's used by people in the garment industry. And safra dagadita is the scrolls of Agadic literature. And he took them from Yesoimim, from orphans. The case involving a claimer of these items who brought witnesses that they were his, and he, the claimer, is saying he loaned these items to their father. And Rava enabled the owner to extract them from the orphans. What does that show about Rava? That he holds, had their father been around and had the father of these Yesoimim, had the Tovea, that is, the claimer, confronted their father, had this claimer confronted their father, and their father would have said, well, I bought them, the father would not have been believed, even had he sworn. Because if it were not that way, if it were that the father of the Yesoimim would have been believed, through taking an oath, we would have intervened on behalf of the Yesoimim. So from the fact that Rava enabled the Tovea, the claimer, to get the scissors and the Agodah scroll back from the Yesoimim, that was on the grounds, Bidvorim Hoasuyim Lahashu Lahaskir, on the grounds that these are items that people ordinarily loan out to others. And just to repeat the main point here, and that demonstrates that had their father been alive with the claim of, well, I bought them, he would have lost out. Therefore, even though the father is not around, we cannot intervene on their behalf, and the owner will get them back on these grounds. The Gemara now continues with a comment on the Mishnah, where two witnesses saw someone go into someone's house to take something without permission. Omar Rava, Afilu Shomer Nishba. Not only does the owner have the ability to swear, but even the Shomer, a person who was hired to guard the house, and not just the owner of the item, but the Shomer as well, can swear what was taken and thereby extract from the taker. Afilu ishto shel shomer nishbas. Even the wife of the shomer has that right to swear as to what was taken. Boi Rav Papa, schiru lukito mai. Rav Papa asks, what is the status regarding hired workers of the homeowner? They were not entrusted with guarding of the house. Do they also have the power to swear regarding the identity of the items taken and thereby enable the homeowner to collect takeup? So as far as Rav Popa's question is concerned regarding Schiru Likito, that remains unresolved. Homale Rav Yemar le Ravashi, Toano Koso de Kaspo Mai. Let's say the homeowner claims that a silver goblet was taken. Let's assume for the sake of this Gemara that a silver goblet is an expensive item. Can a person claim something like that and swear and collect? Omar lay. So Ravashi says, Chazino, we evaluate. Inish de omidhu, if the homeowner is a man of wealth, o inish de mehemunhu de mafkidi inshigabe, or a very trustworthy man, that people would entrust things of value to him. Mishtaba v'shokil, so he can swear regarding this item of expense and collect. V'ilo, if he's neither of these things, he's neither a man of wealth or he is not a trustworthy person, lo, then he cannot. Nechbal ketzad. The Mishnah is one of its additional examples, the third example of someone who can swear and collect payment, involves someone who was attacked and injured. Omar Yehuda Omar Shmuel, Lo Shanu, this teaching of the Mishnah that a person can swear and collect payment, Ela b'mokam shiyachol l'chabil ba'atzmo. This only is with regard to a part of his own body that he could have imposed the injury himself. Avol b'mokam she'enu yachol l'chabil ba'atzmo, notel sheloi b'shvuah. But if it's a part of his body that the victim himself can't reach, cannot impose that injury on himself, he is entitled to collect even without taking an oath. Just to just review the point in the Mishnah, so you have witnesses that claim that testify they saw so and so go into someone's domain healthy and walked out of that person's domain injured. And the victim is saying that you, the owner of that domain, you injured me. And the fellow responds, I didn't do anything to you. The din of the Mishnah, then, according to Shmuel, that the victim has to swear before he can collect, that's only regarding a part of his body that he himself could have imposed this injury. But if it's a part of his body that the victim himself couldn't have injured, it's clear that the other party is the one that did it, and hence the victim can extract payment even without swearing. Question: the dilma v'nechosh dilma b'kaisel nischachich. True that you can't reach that part of your body through your own volition, but maybe you rubbed into a wall and caused the injury through that. For example, just imagine the a person's back, where you can't reach the certain parts of your back, and there is the injury. Even though you can't reach it, maybe you banged yourself into the wall. Tony Rebbe Chia, Sha'olsa loy nishicha begabo uvein atzile yodav. The explanation of the this din that you can collect even without swearing, that is in the case of a bite mark on your back between your shoulder blades. That can't be ascribed to rubbing into a wall, and it's certainly something you couldn't do to yourself. The Gemara asks, "V'dilma acher ovid lei?" Maybe someone else did it, someone other than the person being charged. The Gemara says, "The leko acher." The Mishnah is speaking about circumstances that there was no one else there. The Gemara continues, "V'shekenegdo choshud v'chule v'afilu shvuas shav." We have been speaking about the Mishnah's list of those that have a right to swear and thereby collect. Amongst the different situations is where the person who ordinarily would be expected to swear, we call the Shvua Liftar, he himself, though, is suspect of lying. And the Mishnah went on to say, not only lying in Shvuas that are clearly, let's say, money-related oaths, but even Shvuas Shav. A Shvuas Shav is a person that would simply lie about something that's known to people and claim otherwise. For example, he would swear concerning a stone pillar, this is made of gold. The Gemara asks about the language of the Mishnah. My afilu Shvuas Shav. What's this expression of even if he suspect concerning a Shvuas Shav? The Gemara explains, lo mi baya komar. The structure of the Mishnah, the understanding of the Mishnah, is in the lo mi baya sense, which is translated as it goes without saying. What do we mean by that? Lo mi baya hanoch di isbuk firas momon. It goes without saying that someone who would lie under oath, an oath that would be a denial of money that is truly owed, where someone would lie causing a monetary loss to someone, that an individual like that does not swear. We transfer the shvua off of him and put it on the opposite party, the one who's trying to collect. Elo afilu ha nami dekfiras dvorim ba'almohu. Even this case, even a case like this where we have someone that would swear falsely concerning the example we gave before, which we call a shvua shav, lo mehemon. He is also not believed. The Gemara asks, v'lisni nami shvuas bitui. Why not, if you're already listing different kinds of oaths that a person is considered suspect when he would swear in order to exempt himself, and we're including even someone who is suspect of a shvuas shav, why not include shvuas bitui, an oath of utterance? The Gemara answers, ki katani shvua dechi komishtaba b'shikra komishtaba. The person who is considered suspect is someone that at the time he is swearing falsely. Aval shvuas bitui, the nature of an oath of utterance, the ika lememar debekushto komishtaba lo katani. For example, someone swears, I will not eat a loaf of bread today. Well, when he swears, the day might go by and he doesn't eat it, and he's bekushto means he's swearing honestly. By the end of the day, where even though he swore he's not going to eat the loaf of bread, he ends up eating it. But at the time that he swore, it could have been an oath that would have been fulfilled. It wouldn't have been a lie. So a shvuas bitui doesn't conform to the standards of falsehood in order to deem someone untrustworthy. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Three lines from the bottom. Shvuas bitui de lehabo, an oath of utterance with a future connotation. Ki mishtaba, when he swears, ika lemeimar bekushto ishtaba. At the time of day that he's swearing, he might be swearing with a sense of honesty. Shebedaito lekaimo, his intention is to fulfill his oath. Vafilu avar ole, even if he violates his oath of utterance, shekofo yitzro, his evil inclination got the better of him. Eino choshed bekach al hashvua sheovar lahoitzi lesheker mipiv. That doesn't make him suspect of lying concerning matters in the past that would then label him as an untrustworthy individual. The difference, we'll call the factor that needs to be emphasized, is that in the case of Yeshua's bitui, even though there might be a violation, being that it's a future type violation, he is simply the victim of his yetzer, of his evil inclination, not making him into a liar. The Gemara continues, Tenach ochal velo ochal. This analysis as to why Shvuas Bitui is not included is valid with regard to future tense oaths. A guy swears, ochal, I will eat the loaf of bread by the end of the day, or conversely, I will not eat the loaf of bread by the end of the day. Ochalti velo ochalti, Michael Amen. What about a past tense Shvuas Bitui? For example, he swears, I ate some item when in fact he did not. Or I did not eat some item when in fact he did. Those are examples of oaths of utterance that are past tense. That at the time he is swearing, it is a lie, if so be it. Wouldn't that disqualify him as being someone who could swear, and we would transfer the oath from him to the opposite party, to the other litigant, enabling to swear and collect? The Gemara says, you're right. Tona shvuas shav. The Mishnah taught that someone who was suspect regarding a shvuas shav cannot swear to exempt himself. And we continue at the top of Daf Mem Zayin. V'chol de domi le, and all other cases that are similar, namely past tense oaths, just like a shvuas shav concerns a pillar that's already been built, and you're trying to change the past, claiming that it was made of some material other than which it is obviously made of. Likewise, in a shvuas bitui of a past tense nature, if you are found to be lying, you lose your credibility and reliability regarding vows, regarding oaths, and if you are claiming exemption, you won't be believed to swear to substantiate your position. And the opposite party will have the right to swear and collect. If one of the litigants was a gambler, is considered a rabbinic thief. In gambling, the assumption, we'll say the Talmudic analysis of gambling is where someone is, we'll say, wagering, and at the time that he's wagering, he really expects to win. And when he loses and the other fellow takes the money, so he's taking money against the will of the one that lost the wager. So that all kinds of games that involve money, where money is at stake, and the players individually think that they are going to win, and when they don't, when they lose their money, they are, we'll say, they're upset to the extent that they weren't really willing to part with their money. So even though it's not an example of Torah level theft, it's considered rabbinic theft. Gezel derabbanan. Our Mishnah says that people that are involved with that kind of lifestyle are likewise disqualified from swearing the type of oath that would have led to their exemption. Ha su lamali, what do I need this example for, once we've already established that people that lie under oath are disqualified. So the Gemara answers, Tana psula doraisa v'katani psula derabbanan. The Mishnah features people that are disqualified on a Torah level. They're, we'll say, Torah level violators. And it teaches also rabbinic level disqualifications. Hayushneim chashudin. The Mishnah featured a case where both litigants are suspect. And we saw two opinions in the Mishnah. Chosro shvua lemekoma, divrei Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Meir omer yachloiku. We have two names, Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Meir, and two statements. One is Chosro shvua lemekoma, and the other one is yachloiku. It's true, the Mishnah is printed in a particular way, but that does not often in the Shas dictate what the actual proper version is, and therefore the Gemara discusses at times these kind of Mishnayos. So Amalei Rava LaRav Nachman, Heichi Tnan, is it Rabbi Yosi or Rabbi Meir, the one that says Yachloiku? And again, this question is raised regardless of the printed Mishnah that we have in front of us. Amalei Rav Nachman responds, Lo Yodana, I don't know. The Gemara asks, well, Hilchus Amai, what is the halacha when you have two people that are, both of them are choshud, are suspect of lying vis-a-vis their oaths? Amalei Lo Yodana, I don't know. Itmar Om Rav Yosef Bar Menyumi Om Rav Nachman, Rav Yosi Oimer Yachloku, V'chein Toni Rav Zvid Bar Oshia. And in addition to this report of Rav Yosef in the name of Rav Nachman, that Rav Yosi holds Yachloku, we have Rav Zvid Bar Oshia presenting a Tanaic source, Rav Yosi Omer Yachloku, where you see Rav Yosi is the opinion that says that the amount of money being argued over is to be divided. Ikad Yamri, another version of what we just said, another version name-wise, Toni Rav Zvid, Omer Rav Oshaya, Rav Yosi Omer Yachloku. Instead of having the version of Rav Zvid, the son of Oshia, you have Rav Zvid teaching in the name of Rav Oshia that Rav Yosi Omer Yachloku. Omer Rav Yosef Bar Menyumi, Ovad Rav Nachman Uvda Yachloku. Again, here too you have part of this second version. We had mentioned above Rav Yosef Bar Menyumi, and you have him mentioned again over here, but presenting Rav Nachman not as simply quoting Rav Nachman, but Rav Yosef telling us that Rav Nachman ruled a Maisa like this, where you had two people, both litigants suspect, Yachloku, and he ruled that they are to divide the amount of money in question. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.